We've got that tree of the knowledge of good and evil going, and its exclusivity from the tree of life. You have one or the other. And I do realize this. You must be righteous to be blessed of God. You must be righteous to be blessed of God. We're going to go to Romans chapter 3. Romans chapter 3, we'll start at verse 20. Read that one only, if I can find it. Because not a single human being will be made righteous in God's sight through observance of the law. For through the law comes the knowledge of sin. Okay, the only way to be blessed of God is to be right, is to be righteous. We know that God gave the law, and the law is good because God only gives good and perfect things, but it's that problem of perfection that causes our problems, because He gave it and it's perfect. And He says, there is the measurement. Remember, sin is a failure to reach perfection. So even if we, technically speaking, even if we don't mow our yard perfectly, that is technically a sin. When we don't achieve utter perfection in even the minutest detail, we're actually falling into the category of sin, because sin is to come short of perfection. And we have this verse that firmly establishes you will not be made righteous in the sight of God through the observance of the law. It cannot be done, and we must have utter perfection in order to, or we must have utter righteousness in order to be blessed of God. We have a conundrum here. Then we go on. It says, but now, apart from the law of God's righteousness, okay, let's say it again. But now, apart from the law, God's righteousness is revealed, as it is witnessed to by the law and the prophets. Namely, God's righteousness through faith in Jesus Christ for all believers. For there is no distinction, for all have sinned and all fall short of God's moral excellence. We are justified freely by His grace through the ransom that Jesus Christ provided, whom God put forward as a reconciling sacrifice through faith in His blood. This was the vindication of His righteousness in the forgiving of the sins that previously were committed under God's forbearance, and to vindicate His righteousness at the present time, that He is righteous and that He accepts as righteous him that has faith in Jesus. Apart from righteousness, we cannot be blessed. We cannot, verse 20, we cannot achieve the righteousness we need for God to bless us by observing the law, because we can't keep it. We have the problem. How do we become righteous in the sight of God? He says in verse 21, apart from the law, God's righteousness is revealed. And this is how it's revealed. Jesus' sacrifice on the cross paid the price and all that. And then it comes down in verse 27, and it says that His righteousness, and that He, God, and that He accepts as righteous him that has faith in Jesus. We can't be blessed unless we're righteous. The law demands absolute perfection to be righteous in the law. Verse 20 says we can't achieve that perfection. We've got the problem. We can't be blessed of God because we can't achieve that perfection. Then he comes down, Paul says, there is another way of receiving or becoming right before God. And that is by faith in Jesus. He is righteous that he that accepts as righteous him that has faith in Jesus. Let me read that one more time. He accepts as righteous him that has faith in Jesus. It's just what it says. If you have faith in Jesus, God says he will accept that as righteousness. So there are two ways of receiving or achieving righteousness. One is achieving it by keeping the law in its utter perfection, which Paul says can't be done. Has anybody here ever done it yet? I have tried. Thinking of all my failures, and some of them are pretty funny. And the other way is to receive that righteousness, because God will accept you as right if you trust in Jesus. You cannot be blessed by God if you are not righteous. You have two avenues of becoming righteous: achieving it through the law, or trusting in Jesus and having faith in Him. Both can get you to the level of righteousness where God can and will bless you. The problem with the achieving is no one has ever made that one. Jesus Christ excluded. No human, no ordinary son of Adam has ever achieved sinless perfection. Nobody. Several people have received rightness because they trust in Jesus. So, okay, there's your choices. We'll just move right along. Now, starting at verse 27, going all the way till we get through till chapter 5, Paul is chasing a rabbit. He has made this statement, and then immediately, which usually happens to me, but since I'm standing up here and nobody can talk to me at this point, somebody says, "Yeah, but, oh, I got to tell you, I was down talking to some people the other day who is familiar with this particular church, and we was talking, and I mentioned this person, and I said, and can't you hear that person say, I know we shouldn't gossip?" And the other person looked at me and said, "Yeah, but..." Even they noticed every time that this person wanted to tear into somebody, they always made the statement, "It is not right for us to do it, but..." And I was like, at least I'm not the only one that observes that. I'm sorry, that's just... To me, it's amusing because it was just like ringing a bell. You could just hear it every time you get to that point. That person would say, "Yeah, but..." And so he ran into, or he knows that he's going to run into these people. He's made the statement, you can receive righteousness, therefore you can be blessed. And he heard the, "Yeah, but..." And he starts defending his position, explaining on it, until he gets down to chapter 5 and he picks it back up and he says, "Since..." Picking up what he left off, what we just finished leaving off. "He accepts as righteous him that has faith in Jesus. Since then, we have been pronounced righteous through faith. Let us have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom we also obtain, through faith, entrance into this grace in which we stand firm and rejoice in the hope of God's glory." He said, since we have received it, not only have we received right standing, but we also have obtained entrance into grace. We have, because of our right standing, that has obtained for us the way in to God's favor, the way in to God just liking us, the way in so we could be there in the sure hope that we would see God's glory both eternally and however we go to meet Him, death or rapture or however we go to meet Him, we will see His glory then, but we are also supposed to be experiencing His glory even as we live here on this earth. We are to have the entrance into His grace, and we should be experiencing the blessings, the favor of God, because we have right standing if we have trusted Jesus Christ as our personal Savior. So let us stand firm in the fact that we have trusted Christ. Because we have trusted Christ, we are right. Not because we do right, because that would be achieving. Not because we do right, but because we have trusted, and He said, that is good enough for me. If you will trust, I will accept that as good enough and declare you to be right before me. If we are right before Him, we can expect God to give us blessings. We can expect God to give us blessings. The other night, I was driving back from a Bible study. The girl that was with me, I've known her 30-some years, close to 30. And we're just talking this and that and what's going on in our lives. And she just blew me away. She says, what happened to you? That's the way it started. What has happened to you, Doyle? I'm like, what? She goes, you changed. You were always a cynic. And immediately I thought, I don't think technically I was a cynic. I was more sardonic than cynical. Being cynical, but sardonic is a person who doubts the motives of other people, has a bitter sense of humor, and I think that's why I would choose the word sardonic. But either there, you know, whatever word you want to go with, the connotation is I do have a bitter sense of humor. And she said, what happened to you? You're not cynical. Now, the reason this blows me away is for 30 years, my best friends, the people who have known me, has said, you are so cynical. Now, this is apart from the people that said I was negative. You are so cynical. And she said, what has happened to you? So then you start going through your mind. One, I was not saved because I got saved in 1970, November the 19th, about midnight. I was not filled with the Spirit, had the second work of grace. I did not achieve sanctification. I did not receive the unction, because that had happened in about 1972 through 1974. I've been across all these denominations, so I know, just fill in whatever word you think should fit at that point. Unction, baptism, sanctification, glorification. I don't glow in the dark. You know, been there, done that too. Wasn't that. It wasn't that I had received a great education because I graduated out of Moody Bible Institute in 1980. It wasn't my association with the fundamentalist, evangelical, non-denominational, saved, sanctified, and born-again, glorified church, because I'd done that already. And I'm going, well, what's happened to me? Well, Joe. And I said, I'll tell you what's happened to me. God is teaching me about His grace. And that has changed me. And she just kind of, I said, here's what's been going on, and this is why I have been bitter. Because when I got saved, I set my cap on this. Whatever He wants, I'll do it. I will learn, I will study, I will go to Bible college, I will go to great lengths. Whatever is required, I want to achieve it because I want to be blessed of God. And I said, for 30 years, I have done everything I was told to do. I have listened to all the preachers. I have read all the books. I went to the Bible college you go to. I studied. I tried everything that came down the pike that I could prove to be scriptural. And no matter how hard I tried, I could not achieve the blessing that I wanted from God, that constant state of I know He's there and He loves me. I could not achieve that presence in my life where the blessings just flowed down upon me. And now he has blessed me. I quit and he has blessed me. And then it came, the parable of the prodigal son. I know we've all read it, we've all heard it, we've all heard it preached. That lousy scoundrel, little young twerp, takes off with all that money, goes out, has a good time, blows it on drugs and fast and loose women and drinking and partying and carousing until he has no money. Then he gets a job and tries to earn more so he can drink and carouse and make more and have more party. And finally he gets down to the lowest, and it says he comes to his senses and says, my father treats his servants better than this. And he goes back. You know, and we say, and that guy got right with the Lord, and that guy walked in the presence of God, and God forgave him of his sins. That's true. And I was that way when I started off. Later I came to understand the part of the older brother. I'm standing there as a Christian looking at all these young Christians coming down the pike, and God is blessing them and his blessings are just flowing upon them. And I'm going, God, I'm doing everything. I'm teaching Sunday school classes. I'm trying to do missions works. I'm giving money. I'm, you know, listed all. And I am not being blessed, and I'm doing everything. And the people in the churches that I have attended over the year, they would all say, yeah, that's just the way God is. This makes God sound bad. Yeah, that's just the way God is. He gets you started and he reels you in. And I'm going, and it's like you get saved and he uses his blessings to set that hook. And then he just drags you along the rest of your life. You know, and you're afraid to let go because you'll go to hell and burn forever. And you're just like, and you want to be in his presence because you were one time one of those people who first got saved, and you know what it's like to have God's presence in your life and to be blessed. And that's that older brother. He told his father when he stormed out of the house that night and he came home and his dad was throwing a party for the younger brother. He said to his dad outside, because the father came to him, he said, Dad, I have been with you and I have worked all my life, and you have killed a fatted calf for that rascal. And I've got nothing. And I've been here working for you, and you've never given me so much as a lamb. And the father said, Kid, everything I have is yours. You've been with me always. You're my son. And I said, that's it. It's the parable of the older brother. I still could not achieve the blessings of God, even though I knew that it was the parable of the older brother. When I was talking that night, I realized it's the parable of the father. The father knew when he gave that young kid everything he asked for, what he was going to do. But the father gave it to him anyway. The father knew that kid would come back. Does not the Bible say, train up a child in the way he shall go, and he shall not part from it when he gets older? He was watching for that kid to come home because he knew he would. What happened is the son had a revelation, and the revelation was this. My dad's a good guy. My dad is good. My dad will be good to me. I don't deserve it, but he will be good to me. The son, the older son, stayed there and worked for that man all the time. Work, 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 and a guy paid him. But he never blessed him. And that older boy was bitter, not against the son, which he vented against, the younger brother. He was actually bitter with the father because his father never blessed him. And the father basically was saying, you have worked for everything and I have paid you well for what you did. If you wanted to be blessed, just ask for the silly lamb. And I would have gave it to you. But you wanted to work and earn it. I know of a situation where this man actually spent all his life working for his father on a dairy farm. He had brothers and sisters, and the younger brother, the sisters all married, the younger brother went off to college, became a school teacher. He worked on that farm, the older brother did, year after year after decade. His father paid him, And the brother, or the older brother, always assumed that he would receive that farm. The old guy got to be 90-some years old and announced one day, I have sold the farm. It's gone. And we're talking dairy cattle. Some of them were worth $90,000. I have sold my herd. I have sold the equipment. I have sold everything. And I'm dividing it up between my kids equally. The older son played out the role. I worked all my life for you. He never understood if he really wanted something. He should have just said, Dad, I want this. If he had wanted that farm, why didn't he just approach his father and said, Dad, I know what's going to happen, and I want the farm. Would you give it to me? I'm sure the father would have said, well, we've got to work out a little equity here so that their brothers and sisters are not going to be fighting over this whole thing. But given a few decades, a couple of years, we can balance it out some way, I'm sure. The older brother was devastated. I was the part of the older brother. And I had not realized this one fact. God is just good. And I was working and striving so hard, trying to get in the position where God would just bless me, and He wouldn't do it because I was working. I'll pay you for that. Because I was saying, I'm working for you, I'm working for you. Fine, here's your payment, here's your payment, here's your payment, here's your payment. And one day I said, God, I can't keep this up anymore. I cannot walk before you. I cannot keep myself. I am not able to go on anymore. I quit. If you want to keep me, you keep me. And that's when he started teaching me about his grace. It was like, Doyle, I've been trying to get you to this point for a long time. They're exclusive. Either you can work and try to achieve so that God will bless you, or you can give it up and just say, God, I quit. Will you bless me? I just need your help. This is not a matter of doing good. This is a matter of achieving. You want to achieve? Fine, go for it. You got one way of doing it. It's under the law. You got to be perfect. If you're trying to earn that blessing of God by being perfect, more power to you. Get out there and just work, 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 work. You ain't going to get it. Work, 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 work. You still ain't going to get it. Work some more. You still are not going to get it. If you want to receive a blessing from God, just go to Him like the other one and say, you know, I just totally missed the boat, but I understand one thing. You're a good God, and I trust you. That's it. God, I trust you. I just have to trust you because I can't do it anymore. And God, there's where I want you. At that point, remember they're exclusive. I'm not telling you to go out and sin. That is not what is being said. That is not the rabbit we're going to chase. I'm not telling you to go out and sin. I'm telling you to go out and do good because you choose to do good. No other reason. I choose to do good because I know it brings glory to God, but I am not doing it to achieve anything or to raise my stakes in His presence or to earn a blessing. I choose to do good because I choose to do good. He has blessed me and done me so much good. I choose to do good, and if I mess it up, God have mercy upon me. I am not perfect. God, pick me up. I'm willing to let you pick me up and start me off all over again, and the blessings will continue. But at the time you quit saying, or the time you say, I've got to do my part, God says, fine, if you want to do your part, work. Work, 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 work. But if you want to be my son, trust me, I'll take care of it. Galatians chapter 5. For this freedom, Christ has liberated us. That's the freedom to do good because we choose to do it. For this freedom, Christ has liberated us. Stand firm. That's why I said in Romans, stand firm. Stand in that grace. Stand firm then, and do not be held fast again. Don't be held fast by the yoke of servitude. Do not be held fast by service to the law. Take note of what I, Paul, tell you. If you become circumcised, Christ will not benefit you. Over in chapter 3, verse 1, O thou thoughtless, or O thou foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you, before whose eyes Jesus Christ was so graphically presented as crucified? I want to learn from you only this. Did you receive the Spirit from the works of law or from faith in the message? Are you that foolish that you would now come to perfection by the flesh? After beginning with the Spirit, have you experienced so much for nothing? He says, O foolish Galatians, who's bewitched you? You started over here. How did you get saved? Because you deserve salvation? No, you got saved because Jesus Christ paid the debt and Jesus Christ was presented to you as a person who was crucified, died, buried, and resurrected, and you understood that, and you understood that that would bring you salvation, and you said, I trust in that. He said, now how come you're trying to walk the life over here by keeping righteous? Do you not see that the two are exclusive? Who has bewitched you? And we know that bewitching is a stonable offense in the Old Testament. And he's asking these good Galatian Christians, who's bewitched you? You started off trusting in him to save you, but now you've went over here and decided to work your way into his blessing, and it will not work. They are exclusive. And the word there, bewitched, is this. P-H, that's a P, and that's an H. A... I'll get it right because I'm going to look. Pharma. K-I-A. Pharmakeia. That's where we get the word pharmaceutical. What he is saying to them, we know that a pharmaceutical is a place where you get drugs. That is the word for drugs. He is saying to these people, oh you foolish Galatians, are you smoking crack cocaine? He's saying, you foolish Galatians, are you drinking the bong water? You foolish Galatians, what are you snorting up your nose? You foolish Galatians, what drugs are you doing? You foolish Galatians, what is wrong with you? You started by faith, and now you're going to go over here and try to achieve it. You're not getting blessed of God because you're trying to achieve it. Have you not noticed the two are exclusive? If you're working under the law, he will take the tree of life away from you so that you can't get to it. If you want a tree of life, then you cannot try to work for it under the tree of, under the law. When we read that in the book of Romans, did you not? The tree in Eden was called the tree of knowledge of good and evil. It was not called the tree of sin. When we read that in Romans, the first chapter, Romans 3, did you notice it said, the law causes us to have knowledge of sin. That's exactly what the tree did to Adam and Eve. Caused them to have knowledge. The first law that was ever given was given in connection with that tree. Thou shalt not eat. That was the law. Connected with that tree. When they ate, God took the other tree away from them so they couldn't get to it. That tree that caused us to stumble, that tree that caused us to start falling and never being able to achieve perfection, is the tree that caused us to have knowledge of our failure, and the law is the same as that tree. I'll ask it this way, are you being really blessed by God? Then quit eating at the tree of the law. Give it up. Say, I'm not eating over there anymore. I'm going over to this tree and eat at the tree of grace. I'm going over here and trusting, how did I get saved? By grace. I wasn't worthy. How am I going to be kept? By grace. I'm not worthy. How's God going to bless me? By grace. I'm not worthy. And it's all based on this one thing. I am the righteousness of Jesus Christ because He died for me. And in the book of Romans, God has declared me right. Therefore, because of Jesus, I now have right standing. Because of Jesus, I will be blessed of God. And I don't have to achieve it. I don't have to do my part. I will choose to do good because I choose to do it. But I am getting my blessings not because I am working, because I'm striving, because I'm a Sunday school teacher, because I went to Moody Bible Institute. I am receiving on one thing only. God the Father is just good. And His Son has put me in a position where I can just say, here's what I need. If you're not living in a place of blessing, stop and look at what tree you're eating off of. Are you eating off the tree of law? Are you eating off the tree of good and evil? You can't mix the two together. That's why, actually, in the Old Testament, you'll find different places where God says, do not, the clothes you wear, do not mix wool and linen together. Don't mix these things together. God was very much always trying to teach these people that law is exclusive of grace. Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness. Moses told the people to work for it. Get in one camp or get in the other. He says to the church of the Laodiceans in the book of Revelation, which we understand to be the phase that the last church is in, get hot or get cold. Get in the camp of the law or get in the camp of grace. But I'll not bless you over here. I don't care if you are a Christian, if you're trying to keep it, I will not bless you. Come over here and stand with me and trust me to take care of you. And that is so hard. It is hard, and it is a choice, just like my salvation was a choice, and I keep coming to the place saying, God, I'm going to trust You to take care of this. God, I want to sin, and I'm going to trust You to keep me from sinning. If you have any kind of problems whatsoever, and you've been striving to overcome those all your life as a Christian, day after day after week, and it's worn you down, I'm sorry. All you have to do is just give it up. God, here is my sin. God, I'm an alcoholic. God, I'm a drunkard. God, I'm a lush. God, I'm gay. God, I'm a thief. God, I'm a liar. God, I'm a cheat. God, I'm an adulterer. God, I have fought against this all my life, and You know I haven't won. I give it up. Would You take care of my problems? And just every time you confront it, say, God, here it is again, my problem. Will You take care of it for me? He said He would do it. He said He would do it. It might not happen as fast as you think, and it might not happen in the way you think, but at some point you will see God leading you. Jesus, like a shepherd, lead us. And He will. But we have to be willing to say, I trust You. Give me Your grace, please. Quit striving to do your part and relax. There's a show. This is just a show. And this lady who wrote this book, I don't know that she's a Christian, but there's three kids and they're on this adventure. And they fall down into this room, and they fall down, and this plant thing with tentacles grabs them and wraps them up. And they sit in there, and they're all laying there, and it's all around them like a vine, and it's holding them. And the girl goes, I know what this is. And they're, we can't get loose. And she goes, this is devil's snare. And it just keeps tightening them, and she goes, devil's snare, devil's snare, devil's snare. The more you fight it, the quicker it will kill you. And the other two boys that are with her, one says, oh, great. And she says, you've got to relax. He says, yeah, that makes it easy. It's going to kill me faster if I relax or if I fight it. And he starts going, ah, and it just keeps squeezing him harder and harder and harder and harder. And she's yelling, you've got to relax. And she goes, ah. She falls through. And the kid's fighting and fighting and fighting and just... And she says, you've got to relax. Trust me, you've got to relax. And the other kid's like, well, that one's getting squashed to death and he's fighting it. She's falling through and she's yelling, she's all right. He relaxes. He falls through. The other one's about to get crunched because he's fighting it all the time, and she's standing down there and she says, devil snare is great fun, but it sulks in the sun. And she goes, that's the answer. And so she flashes sunlight at it, and the devil snare withdraws, and the other kid falls through. That is the situation with the law. That is the situation with the devil. The more we struggle and the more we fight trying to get free from it, and the more we try to, the more it just clamps and clamps and clamps and clamps. And if we would just learn to relax and trust God, it would let loose of us. If we don't learn to relax and trust God, then let us hope that somebody will sunshine on us so that it will withdraw from us, because it could not stand the presence of sunlight. I don't know that that lady's a Christian, but that's a perfect allegory. We get saved and we fall into this trap, and we're struggling because we want to be blessed of God so bad. And we struggle. And we just keep getting... Stop struggling and start trusting. Isn't that what this whole thing of grace is about? Trust. Trust me. Trust me. Trust me.